I sometimes ask myself, said Albert Einstein, how it came about that I was the one to develop the theory of relativity. The reason, I think, is that a normal adult never stops to think about the problem of space and time. These are things which he has thought of as a child, but my intellectual development was retarded, as a result of which I began to wonder about space and time only when I had already grown up. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is the After Dinner Scholar, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. A number of weeks ago, Dr. Henry Zepeda talked with us about Euclidean geometry, about points, lines, planes, angles, and solids. Euclid lived and wrote about 2,300 years ago and described the world as we see it today, the way we typically consider the true way of seeing it. In 1905, however, a young man named Albert Einstein proposed a different way of seeing the world. Euclid, he said, hadn't taken into consideration motion and time. Once you do that, he reasoned, geometry needs to be taken as a branch of physics. Dr. Michael Bolin teaches Einstein's special and general theories of relativity to Wyoming Catholic College seniors, and I asked him to explain the special theory of relativity to us as simply as possible. Dr. Bolin, Einstein began his explanation of relativity by asking us to imagine two people, one on a train and one watching the train from an embankment. Why does he begin there, and what's his point?
In the beginning of his book, Relativity, which your example comes from, he's describing what we now call the special theory of relativity, and it has to do specifically with the behavior of objects that are moving relative to one another uniformly in a straight line. So the motion is in a straight line, the velocity is uniform, no acceleration. And so the train and the embankment are one example of that situation, where we think of the embankment as being at rest, the train as moving uniformly in a straight line relative to the embankment. And it could be any number of situations where that obtains. One thing I think I should mention, though, is that one of the fundamental principles of his theory is that the laws of physical motion, the laws of nature, are the same for any object, whether it be at a state of rest or moving uniformly in a straight line, and we are free to treat either one as being at rest. So, of course, in the situation envisioned, we will think of the train as the moving object. But in fact, the man on the train is free to say, I am at rest and the world is rushing by me. But if he does that, then it will be the earth, which is moving uniformly in a straight line, and everything will proceed the same for him. So it's a easily imaginable scenario of the case he wants us to take, where the two observers, the two people, are moving relative to one another in a straight line.
While everything in motion is relative to everything else, one thing is constant no matter what, he says, the speed of light. Tell us about that.
So there are really two postulates, two fundamental principles that special relativity comes from. One of them is what I just mentioned, that the laws that describe physical motion are the same according to any observer, whether he be at rest or moving uniformly in a straight line relative to another. The other is that what you describe, the speed of light, is constant. So let me say what that means by way of saying what it doesn't mean, first of all. So if I'm the man in the embankment, I'm standing by the roadside or by the railroad track, and I throw a ball, the ball will move away from me with some velocity. But of course, that velocity may be less than the velocity of the train. And so to you riding on the train, the ball that looks like it's moving away from me may appear to be moving the opposite direction, backwards if you're moving faster than the ball. Or in general, the apparent velocity of the ball as you observe it from the train will be different from what I observe on the embankment.
I may observe it as motionless outside my window.
If it happens to be at the same velocity as the train, right, it may seem to be at rest. And so it turns out to be the case, and this is an empirical observation. This is not something from armchair philosophy, but something I observe, fact that light does not behave that way. If I shine a light, the light beam travels away from me at some velocity. But if I shine it the same direction as the train, the motion of the train doesn't matter. The light moves away from you on the train and from me on the embankment with the same velocity. If we measure it, we'll get the same result. And that applies no matter how fast or what direction the train is moving. That's very strange, But that's the empirically observed fact. The motion of the light source doesn't affect the perceived, the measured velocity. The motion of an observer away from or towards the light beam doesn't affect the observed velocity. So you might say that's the empirical principle derived from experimentation, which is relativity comes from. It's paired together with the other one that says straight line, uniform straight line motion isn't different from rest. One is free to take an object as being at rest or as moving uniformly in a straight line, and all the physical laws will remain the same. But that's an empirical fact. It's very strange and hard to conceive, in fact, but it turns out to be the case.
Well, because the speed of light is constant, then there are implications for time and length. What are those implications, beginning with time, that is, with the simultaneity and time dilation?
So in terms of what I was just saying, if any observer, regardless of moving or at rest, measures the speed of light by whatever mechanism, he will come up with the same result. It's always the same. Now, that doesn't mean if I see some other person moving towards towards a light beam, that his motion towards it won't make him encounter it sooner, if that makes any sense. It's hard to describe. This is no visual. But if light has a finite velocity, even though it's constant, so it takes some time to cover a distance. If a light beam is moving towards me, I will see it some length of time after it goes on, because it has a finite velocity.
If there's a nova way out somewhere, an observer standing on the moon seeing it would see it before we see it on Earth.
That's right. Or in general, so the light from the sun takes about 8.5 minutes to reach us. But if I move towards it, I can see it sooner than that because it has less distance to cover before it reaches my new position closer to it, even though its velocity is constant. Okay. So Einstein asked us to imagine in his train scenario that this fellow on the embankment, whom we're taking to be at rest, sees two flashes of lightning strike simultaneously on either side of him. And what he means by simultaneously is we're to imagine that the lightning strikes are equidistant, and they happen on both sides of him at equal distances, and that the light from each reaches him at the same time, and so he perceives them as simultaneous. Right? And of course, there's nothing unusual about that. We would say, yeah, if light has a constant velocity, the lightning strikes are equally far away, then the observer in the middle will see them at the same time. But then Einstein adds this. Imagine that we have the man on the train now is moving towards one of those lightning strikes. He will see that one first for the reason just described. The man in the embankment will say, well, the two strikes of lightning happened at the same time, but this fellow on the train, he was moving towards the one in front, and so of course he saw it first before he saw the one behind him. And that's all well and good, but if we take the other principle from relativity that says the man on the train is free to consider himself as being at rest, and all the physical laws should remain the same. So what would he say if the man on the train says, I am at rest, and it's the world that's rushing by me? He's still going to see that lightning strike in front first, but why? If he's considering himself as being at rest, it can't be because he's moving towards it, because from his perspective, he is not. And so the only explanation he can give for why he sees it first is because it happened first. And so Einstein says, if it's true that any frame of reference is equally good, if it's true that the man on the train is free to consider himself as at rest, then it follows that events which are simultaneous for one person may not be simultaneous for another. So it will be true for the man on the embankment, says Einstein, to say that the lightning strikes were simultaneous, but it will also be true for the man on the train to say they were not. And that's an odd thing. It's hard to accept at first because we're inclined to say, well, no, the man on the train is really moving, and the man on the embankment is really at rest. If you don't mind, if I could say something about what's lying behind that principle, why Einstein would say...
By all means.
Yeah, Einstein wants to say there's not really such a thing as the one who is really at rest. That's purely a question of our choice to consider him as being at rest. And that, there's a whole history behind that. But I think the biggest thing is the historical shift from geocentrism to heliocentrism. Because once people started to realize that the Earth was moving around the sun, then it struck them that it was an odd thing that it doesn't seem any different from being at rest. One of the reasons it was hard for people to notice that the Earth is moving is because it doesn't feel any different from moving. We seem to be able to figure out how physical objects behave and whatnot, all the laws that govern their motion, without even knowing that we are moving. And that was an odd thing, because it seemed to suggest that there's no way to tell the difference between being at rest and moving. And eventually physicists started to think, well, maybe the reason there's no way to tell the difference is because there isn't a difference. That is, objects move relative to one another, but there's no such thing as absolute motion, which one is really moving. And if there isn't a real difference between being at rest and moving uniformly in a straight line, then of course it makes sense that there's no way to tell the difference, because there is no difference. So things like that are sort of lying behind this idea where Einstein wants to say.
Well, the whole universe is in motion.
Right.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to be detectable, except in a relative sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if we take that principle seriously, then it does have the implication that simultaneity is also relative to the observer. Whether two events are simultaneous depends on the observer. It's not one absolute fact about the things, which is an odd thing. But you had also asked about time dilation, which is the other odd phenomenon about time that comes out of special relativity. Let me give the sort of the classic example. You imagine I have two parallel plates and, say, a tennis ball bouncing between them. So it's just moving back and forth. And I have them at rest in front of me. So to me, the tennis ball appears to be moving up and down in a straight line. But now imagine that we have someone moving by me watching my setup. So if he's moving by me, the tennis ball won't only be moving up and down, but it will be moving a sawtooth pattern, because his motion by me will give it a horizontal velocity as well, and so he'll see it move up and down, but also sideways. So it'll trace out, if he sort of plots its position over time, the fellow rushing by me will see the tennis ball trace out a sawtooth pattern. But a sawtooth pattern means that the distance between the ends, the distance the ball travels between the plates, it's the hypotenuse of a right triangle now, whereas I see it as one of the legs. So it travels a further distance between the two plates, between every strike of the plates when it bounces back and forth. Now, if you imagine that that tennis ball is actually light and the speed of light is constant, that means he can't see the light move any faster, but it has to travel further between strikes. And so it must take more time as viewed by the fellow rushing past to travel from one plate to the other than it does for me. And if it takes more time, well, we can construct any elaborate mechanism where something happens when the light strikes one of the plates. And because for the fellow moving by, there's more time between strikes, that mechanism will run more slowly. Turns out that's true no matter what the mechanism is. And so physicists will say that's because time is slower as viewed by the fellow rushing past. Turns out that the only way the speed of light could be constant is if the flow of time itself depends on the motion of the observer. And this has also been, this is experimentally verified in all kinds of ways. So clocks, atomic clocks, really do run slower when they're in motion, for example, relative to us. And I can say more about that later if you would.
It all sounds like a late night conversation at a college dormitory.
Yeah.
But it's more than just theory. How do we know for certain these things are true?
Yeah, so let me pursue that then. So that's a kind of thought experiment with the so-called light clock to show that it's a thought experiment intended to show that those two principles imply that the rate of the flow of time depends on the motion of the observer. But of course, that leaves us with the question, is it true, right? As with all physical scientific theories, the ultimate test there is experiment. And so the reason Einstein's theory has come to be accepted is because it does, in fact, pass all the experimental tests that we can throw at it. So, as I was just saying, one of the famous tests of this in the 50s, I believe it was, 50s or 60s, was when physicists just put an atomic clock in a jet plane, flew it around the world to compare the rate of time as measured by the atomic clock to the rate of an identical atomic clock down here. And sure enough, the motion of the plane really does make the clock in the plane run slower relative to the one on the ground. And in fact, that's actually being used right now all around us. Most of us are familiar with the GPS system. We use it in our cell phones or whatever to navigate, right? Well, the GPS satellites, the way they work depends on this effect. So basically what they're doing is they're sending out radio signals that have a timestamp. They say, this was what my clock said when I sent the message. Each of the satellites has an atomic clock on board. But it turns out that those clocks, because the satellites are moving, the speed of their rate changes. But for the system to work, the clocks all need to be in sync. And so relativity was needed to adjust the speed of those clocks to make them stay in sync, given the fact that they're moving around the world. So we have a kind of the whole system is a kind of ongoing experimental test of this time dilation, and Einstein's theory passes with flying colors. So there are a lot of examples like that, but there's a lot of good experimental evidence that it seems to be true, odd as it may be.
Now, does Einstein being right mean that Euclid, Galileo, Newton, and all are wrong?
I'd say the short answer is no. There's a little bit of a longer answer there. So let me take Newton and Galileo for a minute and leave Euclid aside for the moment. So Newtonian mechanics, in some really technical sense, you'd say is wrong. That is, in Newtonian Galilean mechanics, we would not predict that anything, including light, could have a constant velocity independent of the motion of the observer. And so in that limited sense, it is wrong. But the thing is, it takes things like atomic clocks, that is, things that are not, you don't just find lying around the world to discover this. Most of the objects we see move with velocities that are so far below the speed of light that the difference in their behavior predicted by relativity versus the behavior predicted by Galilean Newtonian mechanics is so small that no one noticed it. That's why relativity took a long time to be discovered. So what Newton's mechanics are basically what relativity predicts if the speed of light were infinite. Now, it's not infinite. It's finite. But it's so much faster than everything else that for most practical purposes, it's infinite, which means that for a lot of practical purposes, Newtonian mechanics still work just fine. So they're not literally the absolute exact truth, but they're so close to it in most circumstances, it seems to me fine to say that they're right. If I could, here's an analogy, I guess. I think it was Isaac Asimov had this, put it this way to describe this phenomenon of how a scientific theory can be wrong, but still, and wrong in some technical sense, but still basically right. Asimov said, when people thought the Earth was flat, they were wrong. Later on, when people thought the Earth was a sphere, they were wrong too. It's mostly spherical, but it's not exactly a sphere. It bulges around the equator because its rotation makes it the Earth want to fly out like water spinning in a pail. So it's not exactly a sphere. But, says Asimov, if you think that thinking it's a sphere is just as wrong as thinking it's flat, then you're wronger than both of them put together. And he's got a point, right? That is, the Earth is close to being spherical. It's not close to being flat, really. And so Newtonian mechanics is pretty close to accurate. It's pretty close to the truth. So Einstein's relativity corrects it, but it doesn't correct in a way that makes it like fundamentally wrong, like the idea that the Earth is flat is fundamentally wrong. So we might discover, we might get more precision about the shape of the Earth, but the basic idea that it's more or less spherical, that's not going away. Similarly, that's the case with Newtonian mechanics, which is why we still learn it in high school. So yeah, the short answer is no, but there's a slightly longer answer there. And the same might turn out to be true with relativity itself. In fact, I think physicists expect it's not going to be the whole story of physics, but nobody expects it to be overturned in such a way that it's completely wrong. It'd be very close to being correct, even closer than Newton's mechanics were.
Einstein once quipped, "I have no special talents. I'm only passionately curious." He appears to have been a man who was always ready, willing, and therefore able to learn. And given a few other things I read about him, including his interest in the ancient Greeks, I think it's fair to say that he would have enjoyed these podcasts and our other distance learning opportunities here at Wyoming Catholic College. If you're also passionately curious, let me recommend our newest free distance learning course, This Holiday of Spirits, Jane Austen, Courtly Love, and Happy Endings, with Dr. Tiffany Schubert. Registration is now open, and the course will begin Thursday, January 14th, 2021, for 6 sessions. Visit our website, wyomingcatholic.edu, for more details and to register. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.